What we do between now and the end of the year could significantly affect our tax filing in April. We're discussing year-end tax strategies here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 nearly doubled the standard deduction. That means fewer taxpayers clear the threshold to itemize. But Congress included a $300 charitable tax deduction in the CARES Act for taxpayers who don't itemize deductions. Did you make use of it? Are you wondering what financial adjustments you should make before year's end? We're at 800-642-1234. Michelle Singletary is a personal finance columnist for The Washington Post. She writes the nationally syndicated column, The Color of Money. Michelle, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, you've answered countless questions on the economic stimulus checks from last spring, countless questions. So can you brief us first on how that stimulus money connects in any way to our tax filings?
So what many people don't realize is that the stimulus payment really is an advanced tax credit for next year. So when you file your 2020 tax return in 2021, there is going to be a credit on that form for the stimulus. So many people have already gotten, millions of people have already gotten the stimulus payment, but there are many who have not, who will now be able to get it in 2021, depending on how much money they make. So for example, if you made too much money in 2018 or 2019, but your income dropped this year because of the pandemic, then you may, in fact, qualify for the stimulus payment next year.
Okay, so and then how would a stimulus payment this year affect how much you would owe on next year's taxes in any way?
Well, it won't at all.
Okay.
The stimulus payment, with the credit, you don't have to pay that back. So many people sort of think, oh, it's going to impact my refund next year. It will not at all. And it also won't offset whatever money you're entitled to get when you file your taxes in 2021. So you know, if you got the maximum of $1,200 if you're individual filing, or a married couple of $2,400, that was the max you could get, that is not going to, you don't have to pay that back next year or pay taxes on that money.
Okay, good to know. Are there CARES Act provisions expiring days from now that would affect our tax liability, or that we should be aware of that might affect our return come April?
Well, yeah, if you in the CARES Act, because so many people are having trouble right now, they've lost their job or their income has decreased, the CARES Act allowed people to take money out of their retirement fund, withdrawal. Now, normally, if you are under 59 and a half, you have to pay a 10% penalty. So that went away. You still won't have to pay that. But if you took money out, you'll start to owe on some of that money over the next 3 years. But you could put it off. The CARES Act allowed you to pay that over a three-year period. But if you want to start paying it, then that first of the three-year payment would be due next year.
And for people who are over 70, usually you'd be seeing these reminders at the end of the year to make sure you take your required minimum distribution before the end of the year or face these big penalties. That's different now as well.
That is correct. So the CARES Act also gave people a break in having to take their required minimum distribution. So at a certain point, it was used to be 71 and a half, and the law changed it up to 72. So you had to take money out to pay taxes. The IRS says, listen, we gave you a break on all that money, but you got to start paying us back. Well, for 2020, they suspended that payment. So you don't owe that for 2020. Most people already know that. They would have probably taken it by now. But it doesn't impact your taxes going forward. It's not like they're going to push that requirement ahead into 2021. So you're all in the clear. And now you just pay your required minimum distribution for 2021, depending on how your portfolio did this year.
I see. Okay. Michelle Singletary with us. She writes personal finance columns for The Washington Post. She's helping us out on our year-end tax strategies, making sure we understand what we can do now before the end of the year, taking your questions as well. Join in. Are you have questions about how the stimulus payment is related to your taxes? Are you wondering what financial adjustments you should make before the year's end? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Michelle, the last day of December is sometimes a pretty significant deadline, and it can kind of be that year-end housekeeping. And of course, we should have been evaluating our financial situation in the months before this, but a pandemic, there's a lot going on. If we haven't, you know, making some adjustments, where do we start in these last days of the calendar year?
Well, there's not much that you can do. I mean, there's, you know, different strategies that if you've got a lot of money, what you can take, some losses and things like that. But for the average person, just use the end of the year to do like a financial checkup. You know, what have you been doing this year? What can you do next year to make your tax situation a little bit better? Maybe you want to give more next year. Hopefully, you know, you're working and you've got extra income. You want to look at, you know, the deductions from your pay, making sure, for example, lots of people love that huge refund that they get. But it makes really not a lot of sense because you're essentially lending money to the government for a year and you're not getting any interest on it, or you're not able to use it to pay down debt. Or to put into your retirement fund. So you want to look at how your employer is taking money out of your paycheck to pay for your taxes. And if you are over withholding, so you're saying to your employer, listen, take some extra money out because I want to get a refund next year when I file. Just look at that and readjust it so you get that money during the year, especially if you're incurring debt, and particularly if you're carrying credit card debt, which on average is about 17% interest. So think about that. So you get this big fat, you know, $1,000 or $2,000 check, but you carry in $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 during a year at 17%. It doesn't make sense financially. So those are some of the things that you should be looking at this at the end of the year as you plan for your tax situation for next year.
Yeah. So really take a close look at your withholding tax and correct, maybe try to even it out a little bit. Make sure that you're not getting a lump sum, you know, big return that, you know, if you could get it throughout the year, you could certainly put that money to better use.
Right.
So, you know, millions of Americans are unemployed as, you know, the pandemic totally upended life at work. Mm-hmm. First of all, is unemployment relief taxed?
It is. And lots of people don't realize that. I mean, they should realize it because when you apply for it, the states will ask you, do you want us to take out taxes for federal and state? But because people are so desperate for money and they're like, no, I'm just going to put that off down the road, they don't have the taxes taken out. So now, it could be that you don't owe because you have less income for the year, but you may owe, and it might come as a surprise. So you want to talk to a tax professional. I know you're thinking, oh, I don't have the money to hire somebody. But it really is worth the while to find the money you can to talk to a financial professional. And there are a lot of tax centers where you can get some help with this. AARP runs a free tax program to help people who don't make a lot of money. So you can look at your tax situation now before you get that tax bill in the spring.
So you think that there isn't that awareness that you do have to pay taxes on any unemployment weekly check that you get from the government?
It isn't. A lot of people, I mean, it's like they should know because, again, when they fill out and get their unemployment, the state is going to have asked them, do you want us to take taxes out? But, okay, you know, when you've lost your job and you're trying to pay bills, you don't necessarily pay attention to everything that's going on because you're just so, you know, distraught about everything. So even though the states would have told you that when you were applying, or it would have been on the online form, people kind of overlook that. So you don't want to have that nasty tax surprise. So if you check now to sort of get a sense, so maybe you worked for most of the year, excuse me, or you were working till June and then you still get unemployment. So you still may be taxed. Now, if you've lost your job for most of this time, it could be that you actually owed money because you didn't make as much as you say the previous year.
Let's pause there with Washington Post personal finance columnist Michelle Singletary taking your questions on your financial situation. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're talking about year-end tax strategies, and we're fortunate to have personal finance columnist Michelle Singletary of the Washington Post as our guide. There are only about 2 weeks left of the year. Some tactics are only in play for 2020 due to the CARES Act. Have you updated your tax withholding, as we've been talking about? Did you have a side gig this year? What questions do you have about the home office deduction? It's 800-642-1234, and we have Michelle Singletary as our guide this hour. Michelle, for businesses that used PPP loans this year, what will be taxed or treated as stimulus? Can you help us sort that out?
Well, I don't know as much about that program, and so what I would advise people in terms of the tax situation, but what I'm telling everybody this year, if you can, because there are a lot of people who are do-it-yourselfers. They, you know, do their own taxes or they have some software. But this is a year I think it's worth to hire someone to look at your tax situation to see when in situations that you may have to have paid taxes where you don't normally have to. For example, lots of people think that they can, because they're working at home, that they can take the home office deduction. But that's not true for most people unless you're running a business out of part of your house and all of that part that you're running the business out is truly business. So like if you're working out of your bedroom, you know, you can't take the home office deduction because the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that was passed in 2017 eliminated the employee business expenses.
Okay.
So most people don't realize that. They're thinking, oh, yeah, now I can take the home office deduction, but that is not true. Now, if you're an independent contractor or you're self-employed, you can take that, but not if you're an employee.
So if we had a side job this year, let's say, what about those types of business expenses? How would you approach, doing itemization on that?
So, yeah. So when you're a business owner, okay, you can take certain deductions. You are allowed to that. So it could be that you worked part of the year and you were an employee, but now you've lost your job. And so now you're doing some side gigs. Then different expenses get kicked in for you to be able to deduct. So, again, this is why you want to consult a tax professional and do it at the beginning of the year because, you know, they get kind of crunched as they get closer to April and have them look over everything, compare it to what you did last year so that you can harvest and figure out all the deductions that you're entitled to. If your situation changed, you made less income, you started a side gig, you took that PPP loan, what the paycheck program loan, and to see what it is that you can do to improve your tax situation.
What if, say, I'm in the gig economy and I drive for Uber or Lyft? How should I take care with my taxes?
Well, you know, all income is taxable.
Yeah.
So you might think, oh, this is just a side gig. The IRS doesn't care. Yeah, they actually do care. And they also check against third-party paperwork. So if you're working for someone and they issue a 1099, they're going to send it to the IRS. So you might think you can kind of get away with it, but they do at some point reconcile that paperwork that they get. So that if it's not on your tax return, you'll get a little notice that says, hey, we got a 1099 from somebody you worked for and you didn't claim that income.
Okay, so if you spent the year teleworking in one state and your employer is based in another state, will that affect the type of return you file?
Well, it can be. That is, you know, lots of people don't realize that. So you pay taxes, you know, in the state where you are permanently reside and the state where you work. So it could be that, say, you worked in one city and you're thinking, I'm going to go stay with my parents. It's a little safer there. But your job is still in the state where you permanently reside. You might have to pay, you might have to file a tax return in both states. So, yeah, you need to talk to a tax professional this year if that is your situation.
We are talking with Michelle Singletary. She's a personal finance columnist for The Washington Post. She's helping understand our tax situation, what tax liabilities we should be aware of come filing time in April, especially amid the CARES Act, especially in the pandemic, and taking your questions about your finances. Are you close to retirement and wondering if you have your situation, all financial ducks in a row? What are your personal finance questions? It's 800-642-1234. So, Michelle, students resume their education loans in January for perhaps, you know, how, you know, we don't know all the certainty on that. But what if you don't know if you can pay those loans again?
Well, yes. Now, the Department of Education gave people a little bit more time in next year. So through January, you still don't have to make a payment. But here's the thing. If you are still in a situation where you can't pay, don't just sort of wait till the last minute. You should probably call, not probably, you definitely should contact your servicer. And if you aren't already on one, get on an income-based repayment plan. So if you have no income, it could be that you don't have a student loan payment. Now, the interest is still going to accrue while you get that sort of break, but at least you don't have to worry about that payment. And if you are working and you've taken that pause and you've gotten used to that extra cash in your budget, you now have to get unused to that and start making sure that you make those loan payments.
Because that can be a pretty significant piece of the budget right now that is suspended, and you're right, you could kind of get used to that not being there.
That's exactly right. And honestly, I encourage most people not to take that pause. If you were still working and having income, you should not have taken that pause. You should have used that time to pay, to continue to pay on your student loans, and even more, because that all of that money, because they put the interest rate down to zero. So any payment that you made would have gone directly to principal. And I was working even with my niece and her husband, and they asked me, what should I do? And I said, keep making payments. In fact, make it, put more on there. And they were able for this break from March until the end of the year to pretty much pay off their student loans, because they made the regular payments and put more on it. And so they've gotten rid of that student loan debt as a part of the CARES Act.
That's huge. That is absolutely huge. While we're talking college, 529 plans, putting away for college, putting away for education. Is there anything we should be aware of come tax time with our 529s?
Well, if you, once you put the money in and it's in there and your kid isn't in college, there's nothing really you have to report, because you're putting money in after tax. Mm-hmm. The break comes when you pull the money out, and if it has earned interest, if it's earned, not interest, but return, then you aren't taxed on that return part when you use it, when you take it out to use it for your kids' college expenses. So, for example, you want to, and now this happens to me because I've got two kids still in college. I had three altogether. So I had to make sure that I took the money out in the year in which the expense was incurred. So right now, if you say, for example, your kid had a reduction in the tuition this year, and so you thought, I think I'll just leave it in the 529 plan. But then come to January or something, you're thinking, I'm going to need money because I should have probably taken out the 529 plan. You can't do that and apply it to the tuition that was for the year before.
Okay.
So the year in which you have that expense is the year in which you should withdraw that 529 plan to pay for college expenses. So I'm about to pay my son's winter class, and so as a result, I'm going to make sure I take it out now, even though his classes run until January.
Okay, and certainly something to be aware of if the student decided to take a gap year in the pandemic as well.
That's right. Yeah, you just make sure that you withdraw the money when you're using it for expenses for that year. Now, if they took a gap year, you could leave it in there and you'll be fine.
Okay.
You just be sure that every time you take money out, that is for the qualified expenses under the tax rules. So tuition, room and board. You can even purchase computers or the things that the kid might need for the computers, the adapters and things like that. So it's a very generous tax break for people going to college.
Well, let's take a call now. Mike is joining us from Madison. Hi, Mike. What's your question?
Good morning, ladies. My question is, ever since the Trump Tax the Poor More Act took effect, I owe money for the first time in my entire life of 50 years of working, and I have the maximum amount taken out of my check, but it's still not enough. My tax preparer told me I need to ask for an extra $50 taken out of my check every month to accommodate what I owe approximately at the end of the year. How is it possible that even though I have the maximum legal amount taken from my check, it's still not enough to cover that? And I make about $40,000 a year, so I'm not a rich person. So I don't understand how the Trump Tax the Poor More affects me this much.
Yeah, that a lot of people got that check. Well, you know, the check, the charts and all the things where they factor your taxes change after that tax law, and many people didn't realize that. So you might have been getting more money and not realizing it. So they gave people a little bit more money during the year, and people didn't adjust for that to know, to realize that they would then have to, you know, pay more on that when it came time to file their taxes. So hopefully you've met with again. So for 2019, you owed more. Did your tax person told? Did you do the adjustment that they recommended?
I did do the adjustment at the beginning of the year. So I'm hoping this year I won't owe any money. But it just seems odd that how can I owe money when they've already taken out the maximum amount the government can legally take?
Well, like I said, you probably got more money in your check because it was enough to push you into another situation where you owed money. So if you followed your tax professional's advice, you should be okay. But check in with them before the end of the year to see if there's some shortfall and you don't want to owe that tax bill, then maybe you make an extra payment this year before the year ends.
We're getting expert insight from the Washington Post, Michelle Singletary, taking your personal finance questions, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're so fortunate to have personal finance columnist Michelle Singletary of the Washington Post this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Tax rules, they can be complicated, and Michelle's helping us break it all down with tips on tax planning as we close out a very difficult year. Are you taking the standard deduction instead of itemizing? Do you have questions about what tax records to keep? Have you incurred unexpected medical expenses in 2020? What do you want to know about that threshold for deductions? It's 800-642-1234. And Michelle Singletary is fielding your money questions throughout the hour. Michelle, how do you decide if you should itemize or take the standard deduction? Explain that for us.
So when you have the standard deduction, you're going to, if you're doing your taxes or you have a professional, they'll look at all your itemization. And depending on how your tax filing status, will look and see if the standard deduction is better than itemizing. So, for example, let's say you file a joint return. So the standard deduction is $24,800, but you have $30,000 in itemized deductions, then you probably want to itemize because you get more bang for your buck. If you, say, have $2,000 in itemized deductions, well, clearly you want to take the standard deduction for the $24,800. So that's sort of how you determine it. And most Americans do end up taking the standard deduction because it's a better deal for them.
If you or your dependents accrued medical expenses this year, significant medical expenses, what can you deduct? What do we know there?
So the same thing, if you itemize, then you can deduct the medical expenses. If you take the standard deduction, then you can't because you've taken the standard deduction. So you do want to harvest and sort of see how much that you've paid in medical expenses to see if you can deduct it. And again, you're going to look and see which is more beneficial, the standard deduction or itemizing.
Is now the time to invest in an IRA or, you know, a Roth IRA or a 401k? What can you tell us here at the end of the year in terms of retirement savings?
Well, I think it's always.
I knew that was coming, Michelle.
A lot of people are like, oh, it's in a year. What should I do? Well, you should be doing this during the year. You want to take advantage of what happens during the year. For example, you know, lots of people, when the pandemic really hit and things slowed down and shut down in March, the stock market just tanked. And people are like, see, I shouldn't be investing. But that was March. This is now. And it came roaring back. So you're actually going to get a positive return, most people, depending on how you invest it, because the market came back up. I mean, I felt that way. My portfolio went down probably about 30%, and now it's gained back all of the losses and then some. So the best way to do it in terms of investing for retirement, investing in your either a Roth or your 401k or a traditional IRA, is during the year doing something called dollar cost averaging. So every month you put money in whichever portfolio that you choose, and then you take advantage of when the market is up and down. So when the market's down, you're going to be buying more shares. It's like buying stuff on sale. When the market goes up, you're not going to be buying as many because it's going to cost more. So it's like telling someone when the market goes down, people are like, well, I'm going to wait till it goes back up. So to me, it's like you go into a department store and you see this great shirt that you want. It's full price. And you go, I'm going to wait for a sale. So the sale comes and you see the shirt has gone down, but you think, no, I'm going to wait till it goes back to the original price. So you wouldn't do that. You'd buy it when it's on sale, and the same thing with the market. So I practice, and my husband and I practice dollar cost averaging. So we put money in no matter what the market's doing. We did that for our retirement funds, and we did that for our children's 529 plan.
Yeah.
We just set it and forget it. And whatever the market does, we get more shares or less shares. And at the end of the day, you know, over a period of time, we've had positive returns on both portfolios.
Well, it evens out all those bumps, all those ups
and
downs through the years, and hopefully through the decades, right?
That's right. And it has. Our Prop 29 plan returned enough money to send all three of our kids to school debt-free.
Wow.
You know, we've experienced dips in our retirement from the Great Recession to now, and we still, on average, our portfolios have returned. I'm not going to tell y'all because y'all be jealous, but it's been very significant. So we're very happy.
We are talking with Michelle Singletary. She is a personal finance columnist for The Washington Post. She writes the nationally syndicated column, The Color of Money. She's helping us get our financial house in order and taking your personal finance questions, your tips on how to manage your money in these days. 800-642-1234. Michelle, you know, we're in the thick of the holiday season where lots of credit card purchases, lots of gift giving going on and figuring out how much money to spend. What could you tell us about managing credit cards right now and credit card debt?
Well, one thing I will say, and I know it's going to be hard for a lot of people here, but if you have credit card debt that you can't pay off every month, you should absolutely not be using that credit card to buy anything for anybody. You should concentrate on getting that debt. Look at our economy. You know, you may still hold on to your job, but we're not sure what's going to happen. Even though there's, you know, two vaccines now, you know, there's still issues with COVID spreading. We may still have even more shutdowns. And so you don't want to carry debt into an economy that's still trying to recover. So that's one thing. And if you can't pay it off every month, so if you charge for the holidays and you can't pay it off by the next billing cycle, which will be in January, then again, don't use that credit card. And just realize that, you know, I know that people want to give, and this is the giving time of year, but there are other things that you can do to not put yourself in debt. Do coupons. You know, we can't visit a whole bunch of people for right now, do some Zooms, but when we can visit people, you know, spend time with them, go to the museum, you know, have, game night or something like that. I mean, honestly, folks, I know that you want to give to people, but if you don't have it, if you don't have an emergency fund, you're not saving towards your retirement the way you're supposed to. You have children and you have very little saved for their college fund. That is a better use of your money than yet another toy or dress or ugly tie that nobody needs.
You know, early on in the pandemic, lenders and creditors were being, you know, somewhat sympathetic if you couldn't pay that bill. What is it like now?
Well, I am hearing from people that the lenders are saying, okay, we gave you, you know, some grace. Now it's time. But I will also encourage people that you should still call the lender and see if you can work something out. They would rather have you put on a pause and then reopen being able to pay that debt than just say nothing. And so there are some lenders are still very much sympathetic to the situation. They know that people are working or they're not working through no fault of their own. And so the first call you should make, be to your landlord or to your credit card issuer, is to say, listen, I'm still out of work. I know you gave me a break for a couple months, but I still can't pay this bill. What can I do? And all of the lenders that I've talked to, the industry associations that represent them, say, please just call and see if you can work something out. And if they say, no, you have had enough time, well, there's not much that you can do, but then just let that bill sit. Because if you're able to get still unemployment or some kind of money, the fact of the matter is you've got to keep the roof over your head and food on the table. And it, even though you probably paid your bills on time when you did have your job, and I know it kills you, but don't take money that you need for your rent or food or utilities to pay a credit card debt. Now, it loathes me to say that. I'm a person who doesn't believe in shirking your debts at all. But in this case, you have to do what you have to do to take care of the basic necessities.
Let's bring in Judy now, who's joining us from Little Chute. Hi, Judy. What is your question?
Well, I didn't want that gentleman to call before to feel bad because I'm in the same boat as I have just Social Security and a little bitty pension, and I go to a tax lawyer who said, it's not my fault. I'm having more than enough taken out of my pension, but still, I don't spend money. I go to the Dollar Tree. I go to the food pantry, and I haven't bought clothes on myself for a long time, and I don't want him to feel bad because I still am in the same boat.
Yeah.
And you have enough taken out, and it's just not enough.
And so Judy is retired, living on a small Social Security, small pension there. Michelle, is there any advice you can give to her?
I don't know if Judy's still on the line.
She is.
So, Judy, yes. Did you talk? You did your taxes for 2019, and did you owe?
I ended up owing, which the tax guy said it's not my fault. It's just the way the tax system is designed right now.
Right. Yeah. So what I'm asking is, when you owed for 2019, did the tax person suggest did you make some extra payments to so that you don't owe for next year?
Yeah, he did, and I called the state because it was a state pension, and they said they've taken out as enough as they can, and I wanted an extra taken out, and they said I've got more than enough taken out.
So I hope that the person had said that you can make estimated payments into the, you know, you can do that on your own. You don't have to have them take it out of your check. But let's say that you didn't. So I would suggest that you go to your tax person as soon as possible. You don't, and then have them figure out what you might owe. And then from now on the time when you need to file in April, you start just putting that money aside so that you don't have that big surprise in April. So now is the time to meet with that person. If, say, you didn't pay extra into the system, and you can do that on your own. You can send money to the IRS to take care of it. Or, you know what, you can just save it, and when you get your tax bill or you have your person do your taxes, then you have the money to make that tax bill.
Yeah, so there aren't those surprises.
Judy, correct.
Yeah, Judy, thank you so much for the call. The Washington Post, Michelle Singletary, is helping us understand our tax liability a bit more, what tax provisions may only be around through the end of the year. What are your personal finance questions? Are you close to retirement and wondering if you have all your financial ducks in a row? Are you newly unemployed and concerned about your tax situation come April? Still time to talk about all of this. 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org with your personal finance situation. We'll be back in a minute with Michelle Singletary right here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with personal finance columnist from the Washington Post. Michelle Singletary is here. For nearly 30 years, she has been the trusted source on money issues, and she's helping us out with year-end tax strategies. Michelle, the CARES Act made changes regarding charitable giving. What does that mean for our end-of-the-year tax considerations?
So, yeah, the CARES Act allowed people to make up to $300 to a charity above the line. So normally you can only take tax deductions if you itemize. So the CARES Act allows you to take up to $300 off of your taxes even if you don't itemize. So it's, you know, you've been working all year, and maybe you've already given some charities, and there's some that you see that may need something, like food banks. So then, and you take the standard deduction, so you can now give them up to $300 and get that as a write-off on your taxes.
Michelle, I want to change the subject here because you've written this series about the misconceptions people have about race and finances in your Sincerely Michelle columns, and you address the financial experience of Black Americans. I was watching you in the interview with Michelle Martin. What do you hope readers have taken from this series?
Yeah, so I did a 10-part series for the Washington Post called Sincerely Michelle, where I tackled misconceptions on various topics, as you mentioned, affirmative action, reparations, something called microaggressions, the things that the everyday slights that African Americans experience that people don't even realize that they're saying. Like, for example, someone might say, "Oh, Michelle, you speak so well." And I'm thinking, well, I hope so. I'm an American citizen, and I did learn to speak English in school. And so I just wanted to have a conversation about race and money. And I hope people understand that when they hear statistics, like, for example, white Americans have a much higher net worth than Black Americans, they sort of think, well, they must just, you know, misuse their money. But there's a lot of context behind a lot of those statistics. When you hear about the crime rate, you have to go back in history and understand the mass incarceration of Black men in particular and how it was done so that they would have free labor to, and that put into the system that they were treated more harshly. And so I really wanted people to look at slavery as not something that happened so long ago that it still doesn't have an impact on the lives of Black Americans. It does. It still does. Only in my lifetime have I been able to work where I wanted to or even vote without any obstruction, although now we know that there was a lot of voter oppression going on in this election. And so I just wanted to say, listen, this thing that happened to us, this enslavement that happened, the policies that were put in place through Jim Crow and before, you know, the Civil Rights Act still has ramifications in how we deal with life in America. And let's just have a conversation about race, that we have a candid conversation that we have not really been able to have. And so I just hope that people will see things in context and not just look at the statistics and think that African Americans are not trying to be productive American citizens.
What did your grandmother teach you about managing money?
So I was raised by my grandmother, Big Mama. We called her Big Mama. She wasn't a very big woman, actually, but she was an amazing money manager. She took in, there were five of us, five grandchildren, and she didn't collect. She refused the welfare money payment. She was a very proud woman, and I just learned how to handle money in such a way from her. I used to joke that if she held a penny, Lincoln would scream. That's how tight she was with money, you know? And she, all the things that I know, the basic principles I learned from my grandmother, you know, live below your means, learn to hate debt. I like to joke that if debt was a person, I'd slap it. And so, you know, and all of those principles I learned from her, watching her take care of these five grandchildren on not much money, and also just be a giver. My husband and I, you know, we tithe, we give 10% of our income, you know, right off the bat, because so much was given to us. And I just appreciate the money lessons that she learned. And they've helped me through every financial crisis, following her principles. And that's what I try to impart on my readers, you know.
Well, Michelle, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's been a pleasure.
Michelle Singletary is a personal finance columnist for The Washington Post, and she writes the nationally syndicated column, The Color of Money. The COVID-19 pandemic has claimed the lives of more than 4,000 in Wisconsin. And this week, WPR is profiling some of the people we lost. Today, Wisconsin Life's Maureen McCollum tells us about six nuns from the School Sisters of Notre Dame and School Sisters of St. Francis who died at a Milwaukee area convent in April and early May.
Vicki Nicolas Ibarra has fond memories of growing up in Milwaukee, and her mother, Rosemary Kramer, was a big part of that.
When we were kids, after dinner, my parents would say, We need to wash the dishes, or we could take the kids to the park. You know what? The dishes will still be here when we get back from the park, so they would take us.
Rosemary spent her life taking care of people. She took care of her husband, who lived with Parkinson's disease for 34 years. She took care of blood donors at Versity Blood Center, logging more than 2,500 volunteer hours and giving more than 30 gallons of blood herself. And she took care of her family, including her 8 great-grandchildren, who called her Gigi, short for great-grandmother.
She loved children so much, and they were drawn to her. Absolutely drawn to her. I can't tell you how many kids have called her grandma that aren't her own.
In March, Rosemary's daughter Vicky left her home in Seattle to move in with her during lockdown. They spent the summer together in Milwaukee, with Vicky working from home. Then in mid-September, Vicky got sick. It started with a runny nose and then got worse. She got tested for COVID-19, and it came back positive.
I was devastated. I was terrified because now my mom didn't feel well. And she didn't even care that she didn't feel well. She was worried about me.
When Rosemary got tested, she was positive too. It was scary, but she managed to find a silver lining.
Even when my mom got the bad news about having COVID, her first thought was, I can't wait to survive this so I can donate my plasma to help other people.
Rosemary was given a pulse oximeter to monitor the oxygen in her blood from home. Eventually, it dropped very low, and she needed to go to the hospital. Since Vicky was sick, another family member came to drive her there.
As my mom stood at the door, she turned back to me and said, all I wanted to do was just hug you. But because the health department told us we shouldn't, she wouldn't, even though she knew she was leaving. My heart aches for her thinking about that. Why didn't I just hug her one last time?
The weeks Rosemary spent in the hospital were full of ups and downs. One day, she could barely breathe. The next day, she was alert and talking. Eventually, though, she got tired, and she knew she didn't have much longer. She called all of her family members to say goodbye. As Rosemary was taken off of life support, the family asked hospital staff to play familiar music.
One of her favorite artists was John Denver, because my mom loved the beauty of nature and simple things, and he sang about how beautiful the world is, and he told such beautiful stories in his songs. And we asked when she passed away for the nurse to please play Annie's Song by John Denver, and he did. And so that brought us some comfort because she just loved that.
Rosemary Kramer died on October 14th at age 74. Bridget Bowden, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Like the sleepy blue ocean, you fill up my senses. Come fill me again.
And this is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.